You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Heading into Memorial Day weekend, it looks like the West divisions are kind of the same as a week ago. So the San Francisco Giants are on the verge of us saying maybe they're running away with this division. And in the AL West, the Mariners are still having some good times in the Pacific Northwest, but the Texas Rangers are right behind them. So let's talk to the reporters about that. I'm here with Ken Gernick, and Ken, I swore I wasn't going to keep talking about Kershaw, but I do need to touch back on him a little bit. Mainly, we're coming off of a two-hitter against the Reds, but more importantly, it followed a 17-inning game. And so when that happens, win or lose, the bullpen is going to be taxed. It's so important for that next day starting pitcher kind of do exactly what Clayton Kershaw did. Agree?
Yeah, that's what Clayton Kershaw is. You know, he's usually exactly what you need. And on this night, they needed a complete game. And so when you need a complete game, he gives you a shutout. And, you know, I said it last week, and, you know, I mean, I never thought that there'd be another Koufax come along, but... You know, it's hard not to compare him because he's exactly what the Dodgers need almost every night he takes the mound. It's amazing. And, you know, this may not sound like much, but when he went out to the mound for the ninth inning, he got a really good ovation. And that's not like L.A. fans. I think they understand and appreciate that every time he takes the mound, they're seeing something special and they appreciate it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what their record is when he pitches and what it is when he doesn't pitch. But three shutouts this year, all in May, 5-0 this month. So yeah, I mean, what else can you say about him? He's just simply the best. So moving on to some of the other residual effects from that 17-inning game, they made some roster moves. First of all, sent Stripling to AAA. I guess that's more preventative and maintenance-wise more than anything that had to do with really performance, right? They need to monitor him a little bit.
Well, that's what they told him, you know, and I'm sure there is some truth to it, but, you know, they needed a spot on the 25-man roster because they needed a starter for Tuesday night because of that 17-inning game. And, you know, he wasn't going to be able to make that start having pitched three innings Sunday. So I'm not sure that was the moment that they had planned back in spring training to send him down. But convenience-wise, he kind of, even though he had, you know, just bailed him out, you know, big time by throwing three innings in that game and being the winning pitcher, the roulette wheel landed on him, and it was kind of unfortunate because he had had a few shaky starts, and he comes in with, you know, he wasn't obviously planning to pitch, and, you know, in an emergency situation, he pitches well, and he gets rewarded by being demoted to the minor league. So, you know, it's kind of a weird situation, but they needed the spot, and they explained it in that they were, part of the plan was to send him down at some point to conserve his innings so that he'll be fresh later in the season if and when they need him. And that's what they told him. And he said, if that's what they say, then I believe him.
Yeah, he seems to have a good attitude, and why not? He is definitely contributing to this team in an area where they're just not that strong. So moving on to Yasiel Puig. So in the 17-inning game, if I have this right, so he made a base-running blunder in the ninth that sort of sent this thing into extra innings, correct? It seemed like A.J. Ellis was completely incredulous that he did not advance on a bunt. So what was that scene like?
Yeah, well, it was a, in a nice way, it was a brain cramp. You know, he just made a mistake, you know, and... happens to all of us, and but it was you know, in a point in the game where they had a chance to win the game in nine innings on second base with no outs, and Ellis puts down a perfect bunt toward the third base and comes in, and there will be no play at third base. He's just throwing to first base, and league just kind of froze and didn't advance. And everybody on the club was dumbfounded. But, it was Puig, the high and the low. It was Puig at his worst there, and a few innings later, he wins the game. So, that's what you get with Puig. He's a phenomenal talent, but he will do things to drive you crazy, and he has ever since he arrived. And if he can do more of one and less of the other, everybody would be happy.
Chris, I think we talked about this a little last week, but as far as like maybe pulling away, it seems to be happening. The Giants have won 11 games in their last 12 games, and they just seem to be on a roll, and everything is working. So can I deem them the crown jewels of the NL West this early?
Well, you just look at the standings. They're the only team above 500 in the division. They've got a four and a half game lead over the Dodgers, five over Colorado. Who they will play on their upcoming road trip, and that's always a tough place to play. So, they're not overconfident by any means. They've been here before. They know that they need to maintain, I guess, urgency, sense of urgency, pressure, whatever you call it, positive pressure, whatever you want to call it, on themselves. They've been in situations where even during their, especially during their World Series winning years, where at this juncture of the season, they would be the ones who would be trailing, and then they'd come back. So, they know if the Dodgers made a couple of shrewd moves or whatever, acquisitions, maybe even from their minor league system, because they've got talent there, the Dodgers could come on. Come back, but for the most part, I think these guys are starting to get a sense of who they are. They've been pitching; their pitching has been lights out. And now, even the four and five starters, well, it's five starters, Matt Cain is starting to contribute. So what they're not doing is hitting. That's what's remarkable. The last 16 games in a row, they've not scored more than five runs in any game. You usually associate that with a losing team. Well, over that period, they're 12-4. That shows how well they've been pitching.
Yeah, they're 7-0 versus the Padres this year. I think they have a 9-game winning streak going back to last year against them. And their schedule upcoming does look pretty favorable. And really, that's what you have to do. You have to totally steamroll the lesser team. That's what good teams do.
Yes.
But and I'm trying to I think it's so simple. I don't even think that there's much scrutiny that you have to go through to examine the teams in the division. I mean, the Dodgers, when Clayton Kershaw pitches, have this fabulous record, and when he doesn't pitch, they're 100 games under 500. I mean, I'm being a little dramatic there, but the point being that how could you possibly look at what this starting rotation is doing and think you never know what could happen? And I get that injuries or inconsistencies, but there's no rotation in the NL West that can possibly come close to being comparable, maybe the D-backs a little bit, but to be comparable to the Giants.
That's just it. If everybody stays healthy, which is still a big if, the key players stay healthy, the pitchers, they should have enough to reach the postseason. And because of, how tough the wild card battles always are, I think the Giants' best route is to win the division, not get in as a wild card, which has been the case, which was the case in 2014. The Dodgers have won the last three divisions in a row, and I think the Giants will need to unseat them if they really want to have a shot at October.
Yeah, so I was chuckling a little bit when I was reading about Peavy, who is not on a short leash. And only when you have a team that's on a roll like this, when you have four starters who have been very strong, can you have a Jake Peavy who has been completely ineffective. I say that with affection because I really do like the guy, but absolutely not effective whatsoever, and have his manager be like, oh, we're good. We're going to give him some more time. Let's play devil's advocate here and think maybe in a couple more starts when he's out after an inning of 2/3 and gives up 7 runs that maybe they want to try somebody else out. It's basically shuffling in and out of fifth starter at this point, right? It can't be that difficult, except for the fact that he has such a track record as making a lot of money. But as far as, like, being able to, you know, sort of change things up a little bit in the bottom of the rotation, that doesn't seem to be too difficult of a task.
No, and I think if he's still pitching in effectively in two or three starts, they will continue. Allison, from being around this game, the evaluation process is a daily thing. It's a 24/7 thing, no matter how well or how poorly the team is doing. And so they will rethink the Jake Peavy thing. They'll be rethinking it each time he goes out and pitches and does well or does poorly. You know, the trading deadline is coming up. You know, what would strengthen them more than, you know, as good as their starting rotation is already, why not get another starter and just be almost impregnable? So, it wouldn't take much for all of a sudden Jake Peavy gets a back injury, or we know how these things work, you know, or feels a twinge in his shoulder. Uh-oh, better put Jake on the DL, you know. So kind of like what happened with Tim Hudson last year. So, as good as the pitching is, there's still some, you can always get better.
AJ, I'm waiting for him to come back down to earth, but I was just talking to Ken Gernick on the Dodgers side about them having to rally after an extra inning game. So the Padres play 17 innings, and then the next day they need somebody to step up big in the starting pitching role and just kind of take care of things himself. That's what he did. 7 shutout innings. So you can't ask for anything more than what he did, right?
No, he can't. He's quickly kind of developed into the Padres ace right now. I mean, it's still May, so we can't go look too much into it maybe, but it's looking more and more like he's the Padres' kind of presumptive early favorite for that hometown All-Star game bid. If they get one guy, he's probably the leader. He's been nothing short of spectacular pretty much all season. He's had one rough start. It was against the Giants back in April, and since then he's shut them down twice. And last night might have been his best start yet.
Yeah, he's got a 1.70 ERA on the season. It was a 1-0 loss. Oh, this is, you know, getting very frustrating for the team, I'm sure. First, I want to talk about the ball. I've watched the video of the Pence hit that dropped in front of Kemp. Kind of dropped in front of him. I mean, there looked like there was a concerted effort, but at the same time, maybe a little bit of confusion about exactly how long it was going to take for that ball to drop. I don't know. Explain to me what happened on that, and did you find fault in the fielders, or was it just one of those, like, crazy, like, that's where the ball landed and you can't do anything about it situations?
Well, Kemp took responsibility afterwards. I think the wind definitely had some effect on the ball. Also, the Padres were playing no double defense, and it's kind of ironic after the game, Andy Green pretty much went through his reasoning for playing Kemp as deep as he was, and it was, hey, we don't allow an extra base hit to Pence. If we have to face Nard Span afterward, that's fine because they have good splits against Brad Hand when Nard Span's up. And so the whole goal was just don't let Hunter Pence beat us with an extra base hit. So as a result, they play Kemp deep. Pence hits a pop-up, and ultimately that falls in as an extra base hit. Kemp afterwards said, hey, that probably shouldn't have been an extra base hit. That's my fault. That ball has to be caught. I think any ball that's kind of in no man's land in San Francisco, especially when the wind was kind of moving as much as it was last night, is an easy play. So it shouldn't necessarily be an error, but it's a ball that needs to be caught when it's in the air as long as it was.
And Andy Green still maintaining his sanity, for sure. He likes the effort. He just wants better execution overall, not just talking about that game, but just overall the season. He's very pleased with the effort, but he just feels like they're falling short in execution. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
Yeah, and they called a meeting last night after the game. I think essentially he's frustrated, and the team's frustrated more than anything else with just the fact that they can't beat the Giants right now. And the games they've played against the Giants, they've been in just about every single one. I think there's only one game this season where the Giants have kind of blown them away, but the Giants won at this point right now. They've won all 7. So offensively, they're frustrated. I think what what Andy Green, basically the message he wants to get across is, hey, we're working hard, but we can win these games. They're winnable games, pretty much all of them. They just have to kind of figure out a way to do it. They're getting the pitching right now. The bullpen's been better of late. The starting staff's been very good. They just need the offense.
So Colin Ray was option, not so much for performance base, but this is what happens. This is what happens after a couple of massively extra inning games. Because Padres also played like an 11 inning game just a few days ago. So they need some arms, and that's the consequence. So what was the thinking behind that transaction, and how does the team shake out from there?
Yeah, I think basically it was going to happen anyway at some point. And kind of the way the extra inning games shook out, now is the best time. And the fact that Andrew Kashner's coming back from the disabled list. Colin Ray's never thrown more than 139 innings. At this point, he's on pace for something like 190. So basically, they're going to ease him off a little bit. They send him to AAA. They're going to give him 6 days rest before he starts again. And then when he starts again at AAA, he's only going to throw three innings. And then after that start, he might not. He might have another start at AAA where he kind of eases off a little bit. Basically, they like Colin Ray. Cesar Vargas is in the same boat. I think at some point you're going to see the Padres do the same thing with him. Basically, they want to make sure they're keeping these young arms fresh for down the road. It's a long-term plan, not a short-term plan. So they like what they've seen out of Colin Ray. I think if the season were shorter or if it were later or something, they would have probably optioned Christian Friedrich, who struggled in his last start, but they want to take it easy with Ray because it's the proverbial marathon and not a sprint.
Thomas Jordan Lyles, who I have a soft spot for, considering he was born and raised by the Houston Astros. Man, that could not have really have been a worse week. If I have this in order correctly, he hit Ryan Vogelsong in the eye with a pitched ball, obviously not on purpose, and then he got sent down to AAA. So he seemed to be very upset about the first thing, probably more about the eye than he did about getting sent down. But what's going on with Jordan Lyles?
Yeah, just to kind of take you back, he started the year in the Rockies rotation, did not do very well at all, over 70 ERA, and had serious problems with control, serious problems with just simply getting through innings when something bad happens. So he sent him down to AAA. I think three of his four starts were decent. One was a disaster. And they called him up for the series in Pittsburgh. There was no intention to start him. There really wasn't much of an intention to use him. Christian Bergman, the long man, had gotten hurt, so they needed someone to protect him. Well, the Rockies and the Pirates, for reasons that escaped me, started a game on Sunday, and it burned Chad Bettis for the Rockies. So they needed a starter, and boom, there's Jordan Lyles. Here's a guy who is trying to correct a lot of things, and he's just there for protection. And suddenly he's starting against a very good Pirates lineup. And in about the second inning, it goes awry. Then this is just emblematic. I mean, the tragedy of hitting Ryan Vogelsong in the eye was not emblematic. But the rest of it, emblematic of the season. He has an 0-2 count. He's already loaded the bases with a hit and two walks. He has an 0-2 count against the pitcher. And he decides he's going to go inside because he knows the pitcher is looking outside. Well, it gets away from him, and before Ryan Vogelsong can move, the pitch hits him, clips the batting helmet, and then hits him in that eye orbital bone area. So everybody is hoping for the best for Ryan Vogelsong. Nobody wants to see that. And yet, Jordan Lyles was shaken by it, and who wouldn't be? Because it could be any player out there, and especially pitcher against pitcher. You know, pitchers do have kind of a respect for the job the other guy does. So he's already struggling, and probably – I would imagine that, especially if you struggle the way Lyles has, you're standing on the mound thinking, man, this is going to get me sent back down to Albuquerque, and then that happens. So you're thinking that even before it happens. And they left him in for – he finished that inning and just made it through, one-third of the next inning, and that was it for him.
Yeah, that's brutal. And it's not like – I mean, he knew he was going back down. It wasn't like a shock. What is going on? Like, what does he need to – I mean, I don't even know, like, if this is, like, a silly question because he's had a lot of time in the big leagues and a lot of opportunities to be a good pitcher in the big leagues. Is there something that he needs to be better at besides just everything?
Well, I think what happened to him the last couple of years when he did get hurt and it shortened his seasons, at least he stayed in the strike zone. And that's been the mystery this year. Almost from early in spring training, he's been missing with pitches. I don't know if it's if something changed when he came back from the foot injury last year or what, but he's really had a hard time just finding the strike zone. When he was up before, he would go through the lineup once, and then everything went to pieces. And a lot of things could happen there. There could be a mechanical issue, or there could be simply thinking about a mechanical issue instead of, I need to put this pitch, I'm going to put this pitch here, I'm going to execute it, I'm going to get this guy out. Then maybe there's a little bit of, I'm, as he said the other day, I was trying to stay tall and not bend so much. Well, he was staying tall, and the runners were taken off of steel bases before they hit batsmen and after. So it seems like there's a lot of stuff on his mind, a lot of it that has nothing to do with throwing a quality pitch to either get a guy to hit into an out or swing and miss.
Oh, okay. Well, let's move on to Jason Mott, who is returning from the disabled list, and I was reading some quotes from Walt Weiss. He sees him as a late-inning pitcher, sees him in the eighth inning, maybe not right away. So I guess we'll have to expect maybe that he'll get eased back into crucial situations.
Yeah, I think so, and it's kind of a good situation now. You use him a little bit early, but the thing about the Rockies right now, even on this road trip where they've struggled, that late bullpen is pretty good because Jake McGee, there has been some excitement to his closing situations, but he's only blown two of them. I think he has, 13 saves right now. He's been good. Carlos Estevez, kid who was in A and AA last year, has been outstanding since being called up. Boone Logan, a guy who was almost forgotten and almost kind of written off as a bad sign for the Rockies, he's been nailed since the first week of the season. And also Miguel Castro, who just came off the DL, it looks like he's going to ease back in the late in the game. So there is protection. And then if Mott outpitches some of the young guys, he moves later in the game. And then those young guys earlier in the game, Carlos Estevez and Miguel Castro, could really be weapons from the sixth and seventh innings. So they've got a chance to be an excellent bullpen here if they can get leads.
Steve, I thought that the home ballpark was supposed to be the advantageous one. 7-17, that is terrible. What is happening there?
Yeah, that's a great question, Allison. I think everybody associated with the Diamondbacks front office is trying to figure out answers to that. It seems kind of inexplicable. Obviously Chase Field's a good hitter's ballpark, but the Diamondbacks have hitters too, so it shouldn't only be benefiting the opposition. But they just haven't played particularly well at home. I think everybody's kind of struggling to try to come up with a reason as to why that could possibly be.
Okay, so now let's sift through what's happening with these two beanings, Gene Segura, Nick Ahmed. Those got hit in the head by one Pirates pitcher. And so before I was going to rail on any of that, I read everything, and Segura really took him off the hook. Caminero, I can't say his first name, so I'm just going to call him Caminero.
Archimedes, yes.
How do you say it?
Archimedes.
Okay, Archimedes Caminero.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just rolls right off the tongue. Okay, so Segura says they were not intentional. They had heard from him after the game, apologizing and being very sincere about it. And so I think this has more to do with the fact that Caminero doesn't really have maybe the control that he needs to be able to pitch inside, and that might be what the Diamondbacks have a beef with. Is that sort of accurate?
Yeah, I think, the Pirates have a philosophy of pitching inside and, in and under the hand area there, which is fine, and it's an effective way to pitch if you can get it in there. But the problem is, when you miss, if you miss up or you miss in a little bit, you run the risk of either hitting guys in the head or hitting guys in the wrist, which, happened with Paul Goldschmidt last year. In 2014 when he had to miss all that time. So they're a little sensitive to that when it comes to the Pirates, and I think they feel like if Caminero, who has had some real control problems in his career and especially this year, isn't able to control that pitch, you really shouldn't be coming in like that. And certainly when two guys get hit in the head in the span of an inning or two, inning and a half, whatever it was, it certainly kind of, the tempers flare a little bit or I should say, people's emotions run high. There were no incidents on the field, no bench clearing incidents or yelling between the two teams. It's just, you could tell that, that emotions run high when two guys get hit in the head like that.
Yeah, it seemed like Tony La Russa took some issue with some of the Pirates' comments. Is there any light that you – I'm laughing because it just sounds like he came into the Pirates' broadcast booth and was like, no, you're wrong about that, and I'm not – I don't even know what he was so mad about, but what was that all about? How did he hear about that?
Yeah, you know, Tony sits in the visiting GM booth, which is up here in the press box area, and so he's got the broadcast on in his booth so he can hear what the Pirates TV broadcasters were saying. And Tony has a long history throughout his career of being sensitive when it comes to beanings, and he's very, you know, adamant about how those things should be handled and how, you know, retaliation versus, you know, starting something. And so that's a very sensitive topic for him. And so he jumped all over the whatever comment was made, and we still don't know the specific comment that was made. Tony wouldn't say what that was, but something he felt was inaccurate, and so he went in during the game to clear up that inaccuracy.
Yeah, I noticed it just because Greg Brown, the Pirates announcer, tweeted out like, "Nope, no inaccuracies in our booth," but. I'm sure it just makes me laugh because it's like I equate Tony a lot with the Cardinals. The Cardinals would just like always seem to be pouting about something when something like didn't go like their specific way that would only benefit them, and they would get kind of overly sensitive about like silly things. I don't know. It just kind of made me laugh. So we'll move on from that. Let's get De La Rosa. So he was skipped in the rotation, and then he kind of seemed to hit a wall when he came back against the Pirates. Was there any correlation? I know that they just wanted to give him a breather for a couple of days, but that's sort of a risky thing to do when you're talking about getting a guy out of his routine, right?
Yeah, he was, you know, he was pitching very well, and they wanted to skip somebody because after all those days, 36 games in 37 days, they had two off days in a five-day span. So they wanted to skip somebody. He's had, you know, just tiny little minor things. There was a little bit of a groin issue he had at one time, some tightness, and a little bit of biceps tightness another time. So they thought he could benefit from the rest. And he seemed to be okay in that game against the Pirates until he just kind of hit that wall there in the fifth inning and nearing 100 pitches in that fifth inning. And part of it was, you know, he hung a slider to David Freese, and that Wellington Castillo was hoping he was going to throw a sinker in that situation, but Ruby just felt more comfortable with the slider, hung it, and Freese hit it for a two-run homer, and that was the end of Ruby's night.